sleep. Debate.
How to do it. Okay, now we're recording.
Hello.
Girls and gays, welcome back to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
Season two.
I'm Logan Keller.
We're back for, like we said, season two. Wow. That was okay. You just stole my thunder. It's no big deal. But I really can't believe it.
Can you believe that we got renewed for season two?
I know.
There was a moment where I didn't know if we would be, but big,
I really didn't know if iHeartRadio. I didn't know. Or what's another one? I can't even think of a podcast network right now. I just didn't know if they were going to do it, but they did. Our very own, thanks to the big guys upstairs.
Yeah.
Us. We're the big guys upstairs. Oh, God. Well, let's just get right to it.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Are you ready? I'm so excited. I got my wine.
I think we have a lot of, like, funky combinations this season of shows that, like, you wouldn't normally put together. And I think the categories are really weird, too, which I love.
I know. Including this week, which I thought was pretty clever. I think you came up with a category when we were kind of going through our shows. But I do have a question for you, if you're ready.
Yeah, I would love to hear your question, Sammy.
What is your favorite thing about the color green?
I really like what it does to you when you smoke it.
Okay. I dig. Well, my favorite thing about the color green is these two shows that we're going to talk about today.
Ooh.
So just for a little background, if you're back from season one, welcome back. We're so happy to have you here. If you're a convert, maybe this is your first episode. I'll just explain a little bit what the show is about. So on Rate, Debate, Recreate, Logan and I each pick a show based on a category each week. We rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10. We debate which one is better. And then we think of one aspect that we would change and we recreate it. Sometimes we use that term recreate fairly loosely.
Very.
But it's always fun. It's always a good time. So like I said, each week we have a category. And our first category of the season is... drum roll. It's All About the Green. And my show is the namesake of that song, The Wedding Singer.
And my show is Wicked.
Oh, wow. This is going to be a good one, I feel like.
This is an interesting combo.
They're pretty different, I must say. But they both do have a lot to do with green in both metaphorical and physical ways.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Shall we dive into the summaries?
Let's do it.
I'll go first. So The Wedding Singer, if you don't know, is a musical with music by Matthew Schuyler and lyrics by Chad Begelin. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. I don't know if I've ever said that out loud, but shouts to him. And it is based on the 1988 movie of the same name, which you might know, starring Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. It's a great movie. You should go watch it. Great rom-com. So the musical premiered on Broadway in 2006, and it was nominated for a 2006 Tony Award for Best Musical. I don't think it was really nominated for anything else, which, I mean, okay, it's fair. Anyway, so the story follows Robbie Hart, who is, you guessed it, a wedding singer. He lives with his grandma, who's kind of kick-ass. She's really cool. And he has a wedding singer band, and they always play wedding gigs. And he's really excited because he's about to get married. But then his fiance leaves him at the altar. It's pretty devastating. She is kind of characterized not super kindly. Anyway, so he gets really kind of down on himself, and he meets this waitress named Julia. So she works at like a catering company. So her and her cousin, Holly, are always kind of at the same weddings that Robbie is playing. And he and Julia slowly start to form this friendship, and they get really close. Julia, meanwhile, is in a relationship with this asshole named Glenn Guglia, who she is engaged to. And he's just a butthole. And I mean, Robbie kind of starts to fall in love with Julia. Julia starts to fall in love with Robbie. There's like this kind of comedy of errors thing going on where like different people find out about their feelings at different times and they're not telling each other. And it all comes to a head when Glenn and Julia decide to elope to Vegas and they get on this plane and they go to Vegas. And this is different than the movie, but I understand why they couldn't do it like they did it in the movie. But we'll talk about listening to the movie because I love it. But Robbie basically flies to Vegas and he crashes the wedding and he tells her he loves her. And they get married. Happy ending.
Cute.
That's The Wedding Singer. I'm going to give The Wedding Singer 5 out of 10 dot, dot, dot. Smiley faces. As Linda would say.
Linda Evangelista. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to Wicked. So if you're listening to this podcast, I have to imagine you've heard the hit Broadway musical Wicked.
You may know.
In case you haven't.
It's obscured. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. In case you haven't, it's written by Stephen Schwartz and Winnie Holtzman. Schwartz did the music and lyrics, and then Winnie did the book. And it tells the story of the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz, the evil green witch that you see in that movie as like Dorothy's main antagonist. It tells her story from a totally different perspective, and starts with her meeting Glinda Upland of the Upper Uplands in school, where they roomed together. They clash immediately. Glinda's like a popular girl. Elphaba is like an outcast because she's green. And you basically see their experiences in school. Elphaba starts to like develop a passion for animals and also is like very powerful as a witch. That power leads to a meeting with her and the Wizard of Oz. And she's really disappointed in him and like he's not what she thought. She recognizes that he is basically like responsible for the decline of animal rights in Oz. And so she like flees and is rebranded to the public as the Wicked Witch of the West. She goes through a lot post then, but basically in the end, I won't say exactly what happens because it's just so special to see it on stage, but like all of the dots between the Wizard of Oz, like the events in the movie connect with Wicked, but in just a totally different light. And I think it's a really cool resolution. I am going to give Wicked a rating of 9.5 out of 10 hoi polloi's. Okay. That is from the lyric, which I did not know until like very recently. It's, I wanna be in this hoi polloi.
What? Are you kidding?
From One Short Day.
That fucking musical, I swear to you, it has so many words. I was listening to it in the car today when I was running an errand, and it was like, what did they say? Like, she's a terror, she's a what?
She's and a what terror, is this?
A tartar? What is that? I don't even know what that is.
I don't
know. Someone knows what that
there's,
is.
There's going to be a theme of that, actually, Sammy. So I think we'll loop back to that.
Wow, I'm so excited. All right. Shall we? Well, actually, no, I forgot.
Yeah, we have to rate each other.
I'm going to give Wicked 10 out of 10 hoi polloi's. I really enjoyed it.
I love Wicked. Like, oh my God, Sammy, I didn't know what your thoughts were.
Maybe I'm like a fucking basic ass bitch, but like, it's fun. I don't know. And it is so also this time around, like, and maybe it was just this production that we watched, but like, it was really moving. Everyone was really good. Like, yeah. I don't know who the girl was who played Galinda, but she was so
Oh my
funny.
God. It was, I fucking love her. I can't think of her name right now. Ali Mazi.
Yes, she was.
She's the original singer. You know the song Screw Loose?
Yes, yes.
She originated that
her?
Song.
Okay, that makes sense. The voice is She was so, so funny. I just thought everyone was great. It was great. We'll talk about Kyle DeMasi.
Oh, I'm so happy you said that. I didn't know if you were going to be like a Wicked hater.
I'm not a Wicked hater.
There's a lot
I'm
of them out there.
Bitch. Believe me, I know. I was rude to my dad about it once because he loves Wicked. And I said, that's basic of you. But you know what? Sometimes basic things are good.
So. I agree. Sometimes expensive things are worse.
That's true. All right. What is your wedding singer
rating? I'm also going to give Wedding Singer a rating of 5 out of 10 .. smiley faces.
Podcast done.
Yeah. I think we're done.
That's it.
Okay. I do want to start off. I don't want to go first, but I do want to start off with something, a little quiz for us, which is, okay. So I, and shout out to this podcast, Sentimental Men. They're like a wicked deep dive podcast. It's two guys, Kevin and Quincy. And they like interview a different elphaba every week and kind of progress through the show and talking about them at the different points in the show. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much. It really has shaped the way I see the show more. But one of my favorite things about the show is they have this like theory about every actress that plays Elphaba being known for like one of three things, or not, maybe like their performance is most informed by one of three songs. So there's a Wizard and I Elphaba, a Defying mm-hmm. Gravity Elphaba, and a No Good Deed Elphaba. So my question to you, Sammy, is which of those Elphabas are you? And I'll tell you which one I am.
Which one am I?
On the show, so on the show, they like will have the guest on and like say, we think that you're a X, like a No Good okay. Deed Elphaba. And then they're like, oh, I don't know. I actually think Defying Gravity was my one.
Okay. I definitely know I'm not a No Good Deed Elphaba. I think I'm a Wizard and I Elphaba.
I think so too.
Super, it's like the most hopeful, beautiful, optimistic song. And as I say that, I'm thinking to myself, you can be such a pessimistic bitch, but I do try to see the hopeful things. I get really emotional over a lot of things. I cry a lot, especially recently. So yeah, I think I'm definitely a Wizard and I Elphaba.
I think so too. I think I'm a No Good Deed Elphaba.
Ooh, I can see it. I don't know if I would, I think I would have said Defying Gravity, but explain, why do you think you're No Good Deed?
I think that No Good Deed to me is, it's my favorite song in the show by far. And that song for me, what it does is like, so looking at the show through those three songs, you start off with Wizard and I. It's Elphaba's first song in the show, which like, what the fuck? How is that how you come incredible. Onto stage and you yeah. just have to squelt your brains out? Anyway. Sorry, I'm in New Mexico, everyone. Hi. In the altitude here, I'm like still getting used to. Oh my god, it's like hard to breathe here.
Is it really high?
Anyway.
Are you really high? I guess
yeah, it's 25% higher than Denver.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so it's like, wow. They don't call it the mile and a quarter city for nothing, you know?
Water.
Anyway, excuse that. So in Wizard and I, you have this really optimistic, like, the world is my oyster. Like, I know no one likes me, but I believe in myself, Elphaba. Defying Gravity is this moment where she's like, I am choosing this path. I know I'm going to be alone, but like, there's a lot happening, you know, like she is like making this big decision. No Good Deed is when she like, I feel like lets go of everything. She lets mm-hmm. go of all of her baggage. She like knows what her path is. And she, from that point on, pursues it with 100% grit and like makes literally like the way the show ends, she just like makes all of it come true. From yeah. that song, I think. So I love No Good Deed. I also think there's a lot of darkness in it, and I just love
yes. that. It is super dark. It is like way too, it is a song that makes me way too emotional for starting with Elikanam and Nam.
Yeah.
Whenever it starts, I'm like, oh, this is so silly. She must, whoever is the actress, I'm like, you must feel so silly up there, like chanting and like.
Oh my God. No, I like, would be like casting that spell. Like it would become.
I know,
real.
But it's such like a. It's such a, like extra like okay do you,
no, I know,
you watch
I agree.
WandaVision like it's yes. like I can see like Catherine Hahn like up there like yes. I can see like Catherine Hahn doing it like the Elikanam of it all mm-hmm. like makes me think of Catherine Hahn and WandaVision, but it is not that Catherine Hahn couldn't do this because she can do everything, but it is like such a much it's like a deeper song than that. It just starts off in such a witchy like campy way and then it gets mm-hmm. really dark really fast.
It does, yeah. okay do you so, want to go first?
Thank you for that quiz. I'll go first. Yes, of course. I wanted to talk a little bit about, so we will talk about the actual production of The Wedding Singer we watched, but I don't want to start there because it was a high school production on YouTube. This is the only one we could find. And shouts to that high school, because I also did The Wedding Singer in high school. It's pretty fun, so shouts to them. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the trend of adapting movies to musicals and kind of like a specific type of movie. So this actually came out before Legally Blonde, which I was surprised. They like came up around the same time.
But really?
This like premiered on Broadway.
Was like, this 2005?
Year or so before. It was 2006. And isn't Legally Blonde like 2007?
I think so.
I definitely looked this up when I wrote this. So I'm
I believe it. No,
I'm sure I'm right. But about the same time, but maybe like a year or so before. But I feel like this is a show and kind of a long line of these musicals based on popular movies. So you had like Legally Blonde, which is honestly the gold standard of these adaptations.
Yes, agreed.
Then Wedding Singer, Mean Girls is one, School of Rock, Pretty Woman, which I saw like 2 years ago, which
you're
honestly-
a Pretty Woman stan, aren't you?
Had a great time. I loved Pretty Woman, the musical. I also saw-
Samantha Barks and Andy Carl, what's his name?
I saw it the week, the singular week that Adam Pascal was in it.
Oh my God.
And we didn't know. We just like bought tickets randomly because my sister loves Pretty Woman and she was with me. So we decided to go see that. And it was just Adam Pascal. He had like a black Escalade pick him up. It was the craziest six page tour I've ever been to in my life. Anyways, Pretty Woman stan. Love that musical. It's great. So my issue with Wedding Singer as a musical adaptation in particular, well, I think it is fun. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It does not give me anything that the movie didn't give me. And the movie is like a million times better. And I'm not saying that like, I don't think the Legally Blonde movie is like better than the Legally Blonde musical, but I almost think you can kind of partition them as two different things. Like they do make, there's like a couple changes here and there. It's updated a little bit. Mean Girls does that too, where like the musical is significantly updated because it came out like 15 years later, you know?
Yeah, so, like technology plays such a bigger role in Mean Girls.
And like some of the like perhaps stuff that hasn't aged well from the Mean Girls movie is like updated for the musical. Like they'll like change things, you know? And the Wedding Singer musical is fun, but I think it's just like a pretty basic retelling of this movie that is elevated beyond its original premise. Like the movie is super fun. It takes place in the 80s. That's really fun. So does the musical. 80s nostalgia. Love it. Great. They make shows about that all the time. Great. But I think, and I've never seen the Broadway production, so I don't know. It's Laura Benanti and who's the guy? Steven something?
I know, but I can't think of it.
Trying to look right now. Steven Lynch.
Oh, I did.
Laura Benanti and Steven Lynch. But I think what's really missing from this musical, and I've seen clips of that production, I haven't seen the whole thing, but Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler work extremely well together. You're laughing at me. It's true. They like
I'm not denying it. I'm more so just like that statement. Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, like take it out of context.
They made a bunch of really great rom-coms, okay? They like really work well together. I'm also an Adam Sandler stan, so everyone can back off. But
I don't dislike either of them. I'm just not a stan.
Yeah. I just think that like the movie had so much heart and so much of it had to do with those two leads. And again, maybe this has to do with the production we watched, but watching the production that we did watch, I didn't feel the kind of like heart that it had in the songs. I didn't feel it in the story. I didn't feel it in the dialogue. Like, it's just, it feels like a pretty cut and dry, bland adaptation of a movie that maybe everyone else thinks sucks, but I hold pretty dear in my heart. I really like that movie. And I think that's my biggest issue. And I think it says a lot. It is a fun show, but listening back to the music, I was surprised how much of it I find kind of boring, because I remember in high school really, really digging it. and liking it a lot more. But I found that I'd forgotten quite a few songs, and I just remembered the ones I liked, and I thought that made up the whole musical. It does not. And I think it's telling that my two favorite songs in the show are from the movie. So that's what I gotta say. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that at least this time you watched a high school production instead of a middle school production of Shrek the Musical. Even though Shrek the Musical is on Netflix. And I literally might watch it again tonight. I've probably seen it 30 plus times.
Listen, we've grown because when we started this, just
like, yeah, that's true. For
a little reprieve, I did not watch your musical. So.
Yeah, I didn't either. I think I did when you had Chicago, I was like, I love Chicago, I'm going to. But I feel like it wasn't until like halfway, more than halfway through the season, that we really started to like a lot more.
Shit, we have to prepare to talk about this.
Well, I also think that's kind of, I kind of think that's when we were like, this is like something we want to keep doing. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like a weird thing for fun. I mean, it is still that, but we want to be prepared. I think I totally agree with what you said. I do think it's a shame that we had to watch a high school production to prepare
for this. Shout out to those kids. They did a great job.
Shade to them. It just is like hard to analyze this like musical and text through the lens of like a high school production when like they don't have the same resources, they don't have the same acting experience, all of that, and like their version of the story might not be what is portrayed on like a bigger stage.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that as someone who thought my high school's production of Grease deserved to be nominated for a Tony. And watch it back, and it's like the absolute worst thing I've ever seen. So, I think the thing that I agree with and that I left watching this high school production of the most is like, I really agree with your assessment that it does not elevate the material that it comes from. To me, that is like, I love movie to musical adaptations if that happens. And I think Legally Blonde the musical is a prime example of a show that like gives due reverence to its original material but updates and elevates it in a totally different way. Like Laura Bell Bundy's Elle is like pays homage to Reese Witherspoon in some ways, but it's a totally different Elle.
Exactly.
And I just like didn't get that depth from this high school production of The Wedding Singer.
And I think that's also a good point that I think it's important, and this is kind of true with Mean Girls too, and that's kind of the other one I put in this canon, because School of Rock is kind of a different thing, and like maybe Pretty Woman a little bit too, which you could argue Pretty Woman does not elevate the original story, but
I haven't seen it.
But I think the thing about Mean Girls and Legally Blonde is those are like really iconic characters. Like Regina George is an iconic character. Like Elle Woods is an iconic character. There's not really an iconic character in The Wedding Singer, but what is memorable about it is the chemistry between the leads. And again, I'm like Laura Benanti and Stephen Lynch. I'm not sure about Stephen Lynch, but I know Laura Bell Bundy is like she has the range. And Stephen Lynch sounds great on the cast recording. I'm sure he's very talented. I will look into him, I promise. But I think the key to making The Wedding Singer work as a musical is that chemistry. But I'm not even sure like the script or the songs really lend to the chemistry. Like they don't have that many songs together. They have Come Out of the Dumpster, which is like kind of a silly, kind of forgettable song that Julia sings when Robbie is upset. They have Not That Kind of Thing, which I think is fun. That's a fun song. And like, we don't like each other. And like, yeah, it's a cute little bit. Like, we don't like each other.
Everyone it's very, dating, it reminds me of, like, it reminds me of specifically the Glee version of Jump.
Wow. Oh my god, Glee. We should do a Glee episode. I don't know how, but maybe will.
Wow, like this season or
we could song. Just do like the Rocky Horror
Yeah. Versus, didn't they do like Evita or something?
Yes, they did West Side Story, I think.
West Side Story.
And Evita. Yeah. We can do that. All right. All right. Okay. But that song is fun. And then they have If I Told You, which they're not in, even in the same place really to sing. Like, they're not in the same room. And then they have the song at the end. But again, that song is from the movie. So I don't know. I don't think the musical elevates that relationship enough. And I think it's actually one of the better or more understandable romantic connections in romantic comedies. Yeah. Because they start out as friends. Like, they get to know each other. They're both kind of interested in other people at the beginning, and they like grow. So it has like some of the same tropes as romantic comedies, but I think a big comment on a lot of romantic comedies is, why do these people like each other? And I think The Wedding Singer, you know why they like each other.
Yeah, so it's not like lock eyes across the room and they're star-crossed lovers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and back to what I was saying, those other musicals have iconic characters, and so it's easy to like pay homage, but also like separate yourself, because you want to separate yourself, because you don't want to be Rachel McAdams or you don't want to be Reese Witherspoon. You want to be yourself. Yeah. Version of it.
I'm just imagining Laura Benanti doing like a Drew Barrymore impression, like like hello,
like, oh my god.
Talking out the side of her mouth.
I was like, I can't even do a Drew Barrymore impression. But Laura, and that's the thing, like, she doesn't try to, which I commend, at least in the singing of it. Like, she does not try to. But yeah, I think, I don't know if the musical itself gives the characters enough time together to grow as they do in the movie. And that's my biggest complaint, because I think it is actually like a pretty nice, realistic relationship in a very like exacerbated 80s situation. But
My last thought that I'll say about The Wedding Singer is one of the things I find like hard to enjoy about it. So one of my favorite things about movie to musical adaptations is that one thing music, like obviously each have their pros and cons. One thing that musicals can do a lot better than movies is like deep dive into a person's feelings in a point in time. And so I love seeing scenes from movies be totally broken down in a song, or like long time lapses like happen in a song. I think that's amazing. And I think, again, and not to be a Legally Blonde stan, which I am, I think it's a show that does it so well. So much better is like, what an incredible, like, there's so many moments. Yeah. This show, I kind of feel like they just took the movie scenes and were like, song, this scene. Scene two, here's a song. Yeah. Scene three, like, it didn't feel like the songs were giving me depth into these characters that I didn't get in the movie.
They were much more like plot driven songs, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think, let me pull up the song list. And that's the thing, like, I don't even really remember. You get like, It's Your Wedding Day, which is basically like, I'm a wedding singer, if you didn't know. And then you have Someday. So like, she sings about like wanting to get married. But like, even that song, which I actually like, it's like a fun, it's a cute song. But even that song, you don't really, all you know about her is she wants to get married. But it's a lot more complicated than that, because throughout the musical, she doesn't really seem to like Glenn that much. But
yeah.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hey, Willie.
Hey, Willie. He came to say hi.
He's being cute, y'all.
He might sit here for a bit. He just like hopped up on my lap. He does this during work Zoom calls a lot, but we'll see. But yeah, you're right. And then like, I'll mention the two songs that I really love, which are both from the movie. I think Somebody Kill Me is hilarious, but that was, and this is no shots at this poor high school kid who had to do this song, which they edited quite a bit because it's quite inappropriate. and they made him play guitar during it. And he didn't play the same guitar bit, which like, he's probably like 16. Like,
yeah, and like doesn't, you know, have what I mean? Training.
So like, they were like, play this guitar. I don't know. But the way Adam Sandler does it is just like, it's one of those things that is so memorable to me, at least. Maybe it's not this way to other people, that like, you have to do it at least a little bit that way. And Stephen Lynch, I will say, does do it very Adam Sandler like on the actual cast recording. So I really like that song. I think it's quite funny. And then the end song is also one of my favorites. The want to grow old with you. And that's, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about the movie now because I actually, the way they do it in the musical, they've like gone to a like church in Vegas to get married and they have like an Elvis impersonator. It's actually pretty funny. They have a bunch of like impersonators there. But on in the movie, it's on a plane and Billy Idol is like actually there on the plane on the way to Vegas. And the flight attendants, Glenn has been like hitting on the flight attendants the whole time and being like a real asshole. So the flight attendants help Adam Sandler orchestrate this whole thing where they get Glenn out of his seat so he can walk down the aisle of the plane and play the song to her, to Drew Barrymore. And it's like, it's one of my favorite scenes in a rom-com of all time. Billy Idol is randomly there. It's just really, really cute and funny. And I think they did their best because I get that would be hard to recreate. And they like bring in all these impersonators, like Imelda Marcos is there and Billy Idol is there. And like, it's pretty funny. But I will say, the ending of that movie is really, really great and iconic, and I love it so much, and I'm upset they changed it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
say. I'm
going to I held him the whole time. Go.
Okay, well, I'll transition to Wicked. So, I have a lot of thoughts.
I'm so excited.
To start this conversation off, I feel like there is this thing in musical theater discourse where Wicked is shit on and seen as just an extremely basic show to like. And I think that Wicked is like the butt of a lot of, and okay, I'm not like taking this personally. I'm just saying that I do think that like when things get popular, oftentimes then they're like popular. oftentimes when something becomes like popular and mainstream, then it's like, not as cool to enjoy it because it feels less like a discovery that you are keeping a secret from the public, you know, like, yeah. I don't know. I think that it can coexist. I think that something can be very mainstream and very good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel about Wiccan. To start off, I just think that this show is so fucking smart. Like, I think there's two main prongs to this statement. The first is that you have this, like, in my opinion, extremely genius, like, flipping the story of the Wizard of Oz on its ass, like, happening, which, to be, like, to give credit where it's due, I think, like, the majority of that is from Maguire. I don't remember his first name. Someone Maguire who wrote Wicked, the book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which Stephen Sondheim read and wanted to adapt into a musical.
Stephen Schwartz.
I'm sorry. I know it's Stephen Schwartz, y'all.
I know. Stephen, old white man. It's fine.
Yeah. Also, if we're on that topic, Team Schwartz. Despite that
hot take.
Freudian hiccup.
You and my father. Anyway. You and my father agree.
Yeah, so want to give credit to Maguire because he had the original concept for Wicked. That being said, I do think it's also important to note that the musical Wicked very heavily strays from the text Wicked. So
it's a very dark book, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's way darker than a musical.
Yes, much darker. Like Nessa Rose has no arms. That's like her. She's not in a wheelchair. She has no arms. Like Elphaba has like three sets of teeth. And like bang, like she's, yeah, it's a lot more like graphic and dark.
Isn't she the kid? Did I make
that? I think Elphaba actually dies in the book.
Oh, great. Well,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so like there's that.
I guess she dies in Wizard of Oz, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's just a genius. I also think that framing of instead of it just being the Wicked Witch of the West by getting the backstory into Elphaba from this like iconic like staple of a text that is the Wizard of Oz.
I think it allows
for such a more nuanced take on the world than good versus evil. Don't get me wrong, I love me the Wizard of Oz to death. Like I am not downplaying its iconicness. But one thing that I think Wicked excels at over The Wizard of Oz is showing nuance in what's good and what's evil and how that's a spectrum And like goodness is even like a huge theme. I'm sorry, what are you drinking? Sammy, I don't know.
It looks purple, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks like it's like a deep purple. Like, I'm like, are you drinking a potion?
Drinking purple elixir. No, it's red wine. It just looks purple because of the glass.
Oh, okay,
I promise okay. It's not.
I believe it can.
Thanks.
But yeah, I think that you get to see a much more nuanced take than good versus evil. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, so I was saying goodness is a theme. You have Galinda, the good witch. You have no good deed. And that whole thing is about like her thinking she's being good in this whole time. It's like backfiring and all the people she loves are dying. And all the things that she's been having these thoughts that she's being good. And I mean, I don't think she's like in the wrong for a lot of it, but I do think that a lot of the time she thinks that she's morally right, and it's not as simple as a yes or no. And I think you learn that with Galinda and Elphaba. Like, I think that if I had to pick a team, I'm obviously team Elphaba. Like, she, I think, is the protagonist more than Galinda, and I think that she, like, is more in the right. But
yeah,
I think that there's, like, definitely two sides to this story.
And who among us, like, I've always, I mean, obviously, like you said, obviously Elphaba's right, but like, who among us wouldn't, I know, it's very relatable to like take an easy way out of something, you know what I mean? Yes. And like, yeah, so I do think the musical does a fairly good job at not demonizing Glinda for taking that easy way out, but trying to understand why she did. Because I think her side of it is she thinks she can do some good that way. Like, she thinks she can do good within the system, which, I mean, you can argue the merits of, like, being able to do good within a bad system all day. But that is sincerely what she believes, I think. And so she thinks she's in the right, too.
I agree. And I think that, like, what I would, I think a big counter argument to what you just said, Sammy, is that like she does it for selfish reasons. Like, she wants the fame, but I disagree. Like, I don't think that that's not a part of the equation. I think it is, but I think if we're looking at her natural talents, like her natural talent, she does not have the grit and the like. Elphaba is not a people person. She's not like Galinda is. And I do think that like agree on what you said about like, is that the best path to make change? Like, probably not. But I think there's a lot of validity in her path. And I do think that she had righteous reasons to do what she did.
Yeah.
On the topic of things that Stephen Schwartz changed from the book, and that I think is also really, really genius about the show, is the way that he interweaves the story of Wizard of Oz into the musical. I didn't say it in the summary. Spoiler warning, if you don't want to hear the ending of Wicked, skip 2 minutes ahead or something. I don't know. But basically, at the end of Wicked, you're under the assumption that Fiero was killed by the guards, that, and you know that Elphaba tried to save him, but haven't gotten any update on that. You see this like thing go out where Elphaba is quote unquote killed by the guards because they threw water on her and she melted. And at the end, you find out that that was part of the plan. She did that on purpose. She, in her spell, she turned Fiero into the straw man. What's it? The scarecrow.
The scarecrow.
Sorry. Into the scarecrow. Jesus. And then Bach is the tin man. The lion. I said that. And then the lion.
Lion is literally just a lion, right?
Yeah, but he's the one that she met in school, like from the very first scene that you kind of see her. And there's just a lot of moments. I think Bach is. I don't like Bach.
Oh, I meant in like the actual Wizard of Oz, the lion is the worst.
Oh, agreed. Hands down.
Yeah.
Okay. Another prong of the smartness of this show that I love. So when you tear down all the Wizard of Oz stuff, because I do think part of the show is that, but I think a huge other part of the show is that this is just a totally different story that just coexists in that same space, because it's literally not the same. I think you're left with this beautiful story of a really strong friendship between two women. And like, is that kind of a bare minimum? Yes. Is that also like, subversive is maybe a strong word, but like, is that not common at the time and still today? Absolutely, yes, it is uncommon. And like, I think people might argue that they're like, a man is involved, and yes, that's true, but I don't think Fiera is the focal point at all of their relationship.
Yeah, and I don't think, and this kind of happens in the only other musical I can think where it's different, because the women in this musical are not the focal point of the show whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But Fiero, yes, he is like involved with both of them, but I never get the sense that either of them are like truly upset with the other about, like, they have like little quips about, I like, there's something about someone sleeping with someone's husband, but like, I never get the sense that Galinda is truly upset with Elphaba for her actions, and is more just like, this is a shitty situation for everyone involved. And she knows that he like has feelings for her from a very early standpoint. So
she's been there.
I like the fact, and the other show I was thinking of was Hamilton, where those women are not the focal point of the show in any way, but they are never upset with each other for the actions of the man involved.
Yeah.
Which I find, I don't know, I find it really interesting, and especially in this show where they are the focal point of the show, the women are at the forefront. Like, I mean, Fiero is there, but Fiero,
but even he's a supporting character to me.
Yeah, he's like, he's very much, I don't want to say he's a pawn, because I think they both love him, but like, he's very much supporting in their story, and he is not the main source of their antagonism toward each other when it arises.
Yes, I agree. So I love that. Okay, another point I wanted to make that I think is part of the reason why this show has achieved the critical success, not acclaim, I guess, but the big commercial success that it has. Yeah. Acclaim, yeah. I don't know. It's not really critically, like, it definitely got mixed critiques, I feel like.
It did? I don't remember anything. It didn't win the Tony. Critically. Oh, that's true. I barely remember anything about this show because I loved it so much when it came out. I listened to it for like months. Like, that's all I listened to. People got sick of it because that's all I was playing for.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that like, what one interesting thing that this show highlights is kind of like the role of the press, and like being what happens when you're able to convince like literal masses of people of something that's not true to fit your agenda. And I think one thing that like makes that so interesting is that this like completely subverts one of the most beloved things of Wizard of Oz. Like, Galinda is not the hero. She's not the villain, but she's not the hero. Dorothy is just some random ass side character that you never even see. The wizard is evil. Like, all of that stuff. And the Wicked Witch is like the good one the whole time. But as audience members of The Wizard of Oz, we never thought that at all. And obviously I'm not saying that's truth, because in that world it's not. But when you go to Wicked, it's this whole like taking the blinders off moment. And I think that that is extremely relevant in today's times.
I agree, so I rewatched The Wizard of Oz recently, and I will say, I think it's like weirdly feminist for a movie from the 1930s. Like, it's at least in the sense that it is Dorothy's story, and she is driving the narrative, and she makes all the decisions, and she decides what she wants to do. But there is, of course, I mean, Margaret Hamilton is like freaking iconic as the Wicked Witch. Like, it's a great performance, but there is probably narratively, or it's important to the narrative, that there is like less context for those two characters. But I do think it's like very interesting that Dorothy's, like, part of Dorothy's big realization is when she, you know, reveals the man behind the curtain, and that's also so much a part of the Wicked Witch's revelation, like Elphaba's revelation. So I'm not really sure what I want to say about that. I just thought it was like a very nice throwback to be like, this was this young woman's realization about the wizard in 1932, I think is when it came out. And it's like to throw back to that, I thought was really nice. But
yeah. Okay. I have two more things I want to get through and then we can move on to the recreate. So, okay. I want to talk about why I took off the 0.5. I love this show to death and I can't speak enough good things of it. If I'm like really looking at the show with a critical eye and like putting aside my biases of how much I love it, here's my critique. I think that 90% of the time, Stephen Schwartz is literally a genius with his lyrics. Sometimes they feel kind of lazy and out of place and don't make sense. And I think that like, here's the thing. I think that he has developed an entirely new language that I'll talk about in my recreate of Aussian words. Mm-hmm. And they speak differently. So I'm like, okay, maybe that is like a semi-excuse. But the thing is that for me, the Aussian language translates so well at the perfect times usually, but sometimes I'm just like, what? So like to give just a couple examples, in arguably the most iconic song of Wicked, Defying Gravity. Mm-hmm. In Defying Gravity, we have, to those who ground me, take a message back from me. I don't know why we act like that's normal to say. Like,
that's not even a language thing either. That's like,
yeah, like take weird. A message back from me. What? another one. This one I kind of like, but I'm also kind of like, it's lazy. Bridges you crossed, you didn't know you crossed until you crossed.
Yeah,
like I love but, the alliteration of it. It sounds amazing in the song, but I'm like,
I was about to say, I think it's
there
so
are bridges you crossed, you didn't know you crossed until you crossed.
Yeah,
I feel right, like Willie?
Right, Willie. He agrees. I feel like it's like in the song, it's so she can be like, bridges you cross, you didn't know you cross, and like she does that whole thing. But you could have just chosen different words that make that noise. A lot of words make that noise.
And then the last thing is. There are just two songs that I think to give a show a 10, I have to like no skips and I have to love the entire thing. Something Bad and Sentimental Man are just skips for me. Like they're not good. I don't think they even move the plot forward that well. Like not I understand what Something Bad is trying to do, but I think that could just as easily have worked as an acting scene. And Sentimental Man is like just the biggest snooze for me.
But if you didn't have Something Bad, he couldn't go Something Bad.
You know what? Fair. Because if I had written that and someone was like, we need to cut this song, I'd be like, no, we're keeping it.
Absolutely not. We are letting him bah his little heart out. Okay.
But counter argument to that, there are sung parts in the show that aren't their own songs. Like Nessa Rose has her like 3-line belting thing. And it's not its own song. Like, I think that it would have worked well as something like that. But that's the true. Whole song, I'm just like, oh, come on. So because of that, I'm giving it a 9.5. Obviously, I still love the show to death, and I think it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the last thing, which I like haven't even talked about, because I honestly like can't talk about it because I would talk about it for hours, but the music. Like, let's not even get started, but let's get started. Elphaba has to be one of the absolute most difficult roles in all of musical theater ever, period.
Idina quite literally blew her own voice out doing it. I mean, so, all love to her. She's amazing.
Yeah.
But she did. Like, it's hard. Like,
yeah. So on Sentimental Man, the podcast I was talking about, I like, by the way, I don't know if I recommended it earlier, but I can't recommend it enough. Everyone needs to listen. What you hear from a lot of actresses who have played Elphaba, and one thing that I never thought about until I had heard it from this and then watched for it in the most recent time I watched Wicked for this, is that in addition to how hard it is to sing, Elphaba literally doesn't say her lines. She screams them. Like her whole, she's so fiery and passionate. Yeah. Everything she does, she screams. And like one like common sentiment of the Elphabas on that podcast is how like difficult it is to scream that role. Yeah. They literally use that word too, scream. Like I'm not making that up. And I I really realized it when I watched it around this time. She is so loud.
Yeah, she is definitely really loud. And I thought that she was, I've seen Wicked quite a few times. It's my dad's favorite musical. So like every time it came to the Fox in Atlanta, he'd be like, we're going to Wicked. So I've seen quite a few Elphabas in my times. Day. Yeah.
I've seen three Elphabas.
Yeah. But she was, I thought, one of the more subdued ones I've seen. And that is not like a bad thing. She was still really great, but she was one of the quieter Elphabas in her speaking voice. And she was still pretty much yelling the whole time. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the music, like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. Just, like, again, if I were to go into it, I would have to go into every single song. Maybe that'll be a fucking bonus episode or something.
But it's your bop list, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. But overall, I think that Schwartz does such an amazing job of making the music the story. And that's what I love about it. Like, the story is, you cannot take the music out of it and keep it the same. It's so really intertwined. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's really great. And also, I feel like this is one musical where you, if you just listen to the music, you also know everything that happens. And it helps that you know the Wizard of Oz like a little bit.
You don't know the ending.
But that's true. And I will say, the first time I saw it, I screamed.
I thought I knew. And I was
I was so excited. Oh my God. That's true. I agree with you and everything you said about the music. When you first said that you were going to get to talking about something and you thought it was going to take you a long time, I truly thought you were going to say Kyle Dean Massey's butt.
Oh my God.
We have to politely objectify that for a minute. Yeah,
okay, wait. Everyone, the version that we watched, because I know that it's a huge thing to, like, who was your Elphaba? Who was your Glinda? So the version we watched was Donna Vivino, fucking queen. She was on the podcast, Sentimental Man. I don't remember what she identified herself as. I identify her as a fucking Defying Gravity Elphaba after seeing that performance.
Absolutely.
Incredible. And then Ali Mazzi was the Glinda. Kyle Dean Massey was the Fiero. And in As Long As You're Mine, he wears that, you know, like, button white. He's in that, like, steampunk attire where it's, like, white, like, kind of button-down work shirt. And then these, like, skin-tight, high-waist red pants.
He has those pants in all the time, though. Not those pants, but
it's tight-fitting
pants.
Yeah. But especially in As Long As You're Mine, it's, like, mind-blowing.
It's incredible.
I said it.
Just, you know what? Respect. Talented man. Keep doing those squats. Keep doing what you're doing. All right. That's all I'll do for that.
Okay. So overall, my thoughts, cultural phenomenon. Anytime something becomes mainstream, you're going to criticize it. I think it deserves all the praise and success that it's gotten.
Yeah. And I've been, like, a stupid musical theater kid being, like, Wicked, trying to be cool. I fucking love Wicked. It's really great. Whatever.
Yeah, it's period. Fun.
It's super fun, super easy to watch, entertaining. Great.
Love yeah. It. And my bop list is every song except for Something Bad.
My bop list for Wedding Singer is fairly short. I like Someday. It's a fun song. I like A Note from Linda. It's funny. I like Pop. It's very front heavy, my bop list. I like Pop. I like Somebody Kill Me. I like Not That Kind of Thing. Saturday Night in the City is fun, but it's very long and very repetitive. And it's more of like a scene than anything else. So I have trouble being like, I just want to listen to this song, you know? And I think after that, it's just Grow Old With You.
All About the Green.
All right. All About the Green is good. I'll give it to All About the Green. Also, I don't think I said my role in this show in high school when we did it was whore number two. And it's the scene where there's a scene where Glenn comes back from his bachelor party and he's hanging out with a bunch of sex workers. I said whore number two because that was literally the name of the character in the show. But yeah, that was me.
Wow, we love to hear it. I
did a great job. Me neither. But yeah, that's
Did we recreate?
Yeah, we should. All right. So I'll go first. So I was thinking about how The Wedding Singer is about such a, this is stupid, about such a specific profession. Like, it's a very precise job to have, because weddings are a different bear. So it's not like you're just like, and from the movie and the musical, it seems like he just sings at weddings, because there's a whole section where he's like, I can't sing at weddings anymore. Where can we sing? And they do like bat mitzvahs and stuff. So weddings are a different bear. It's just, it's not like just a bar gig or an office party. It's very specific skill to make a good wedding playlist as a band. So I wanted to think of other really specific professions that we can make a musical out of.
Ooh.
And then I just took the first part of the opening song to Wedding Singer, where they go, oh, when it's your wedding day, then the music starts to play. So I just took that line and I'm going to like put it with the profession.
Oh, I'm excited.
So, I don't know if I'm going to do the first one. I'll talk about the first one, but I couldn't think of a good line for it. So we're going to start off on a low note. But the first one I thought of was like an embalmer, because I had a friend who worked in a funeral home. And then I was like, have they ever made The Mummy the musical? Because that would be kind of fun. Like Rachel Weisz and Brendan Fraser, but a musical. Or it could be just about someone who works at a funeral home, because my friend used to work there. Shout out to you, Leah. But yeah, I couldn't think of a good line for that. So I'll skip on to the next one, which I could think of a good line for, which
to
is
the fun home.
Yeah, it could be about fun home. Well, now they already made it, so I think it just should be.
No, I know, musical. I know.
But so the next one I thought of, instead of The Wedding Singer, could be The Bike Courier, like Zac Efron in New Year's Eve, the cinematic masterpiece that is New Year's Eve. Where Zac Efron plays a bike courier who bikes around New York City and runs into an attractive older woman who in the movie is played by Michelle Pfeiffer. And she's like a record party exec, and she has tickets to a cool party. And he's like, why don't you want to go to this cool party? Take me. And they go, and they don't really fall in love in the movie, but they would fall in love in my musical. So to make this rhyme work, I changed the setting from New York City to Los Angeles. So it goes, oh, it's almost New Year's Day and I'm biking through LA.
Yeah, I love that. Zac Efron has to be in it.
He does. He can sing. He should be in it. I love him so much. Shouts to Zac Efron.
Shout out to you, girl.
The next one I had was, whatever the job is called where you use a fake ID and see if the bartender notices. I don't know what that job is called, but do you know what I'm talking about? They do that, where they send in, like, people to use fake IDs to make bars checking.
Yeah, like a restaurant spy, basically.
Yes. Yes, a restaurant. The restaurant spy will be the name of the musical. So we'd have to be careful with this one, because there could be a lot of room for like an inappropriate age difference, and that's not what I'm into. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking you can make it funny. Like, this bartender is really good at sussing out fake IDs. Like, he's like always on it, always on it. And then for some reason, he messes up just one reason, for some reason, not because he thinks the person looks too young, but just for some reason, like maybe the person was really nervous or they were like kind of acting strange, but it was for a different reason. But he thought it was because they were lying. So he calls them out and he's wrong. And that just throws off his ID check-in game for the rest of his life. So he's got to find the person who threw him off, and then they fall in love. And the line I thought of was, oh, when it's almost Friday, and my ID skills are frayed. Like,
okay, like, I love that, but isn't the profession just a bartender?
Yeah, but you have to check your ID at a bar, like a restaurant bar. They check.
No,
ID.
I know, but the musical wouldn't be about the restaurant spy, would it?
Oh, then it'd be about the bartender. Okay, but it'd be like about a specific.
Yeah, incident.
Thing that happens to a bartender.
I see. Fine. I know. I see what you're saying.
Thanks for calling me out. Okay. Okay. So The next two I have are kind of similar. So the first one I thought of was Bounty Hunter, and this would obviously be based on the movie where Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler are bounty hunters. And I've never seen that movie, so I don't know what happens, but that's what it'd be based off of. And the song goes, "Oh, when it's collection day, but my contractor doesn't pay." Because when you're a bounty hunter, you have to go collect your money. But yeah, anyway. And then the last one, actually, this isn't the last one. I have one more after this, but this is connected to bounty hunters. I thought we should just make Mr. and Mrs. Smith the musical. I really don't know why that hasn't happened. I feel like that is like ripe for people wanting to go see that. If you don't know what Mr. and Mrs. Smith is about, I don't really know how to talk to you.
It's so, Rodman and Serena, right?
Yes! Oh my okay. God! And it's the movie where it. They... But it's like the movie where they fell in love and it was a big scandal because
oh, I didn't know that.
Innocent. That is like how it
I didn't happened. Know that was when it happened.
So the subtext of it is like much yeah. better than the movie itself. Anyway, I thought the line for that could be, "Oh, when it's assignment day, like you're a spy, and my husband is the play." Like, that's what she has to go after. All right. Yeah. And then the last one I thought of was caddies, like golf caddies. So the golf caddy. And the easy thing to do there is make it Caddyshack the musical. But I don't want to do that. I would really like a deep dive into the power dynamics of like golfers and caddies on like Masters weekend. Because I can assume the golfer is super, you know, upset and stressed out. So the caddy probably has a really hard job during the Masters or whatever kind of like tournament it might be.
Yes.
So this could just take place over the whole weekend of the Masters or something. And it just follows some caddies and they're super demanding bosses. And you could have some fun with dynamics here in the music because it's on a golf course. And I don't know if you've ever watched a golf, but they're really quiet, especially when someone is putting. Everyone is really quiet until they hit the ball and then they start screaming like, "Get in the hole!" Like they get really loud. So I think you could have some fun with dynamics in that musical. And the line I figured for that was, "Oh, and it's Master Sunday and my golfer starts to play."
I love that's all those. I got. Wow, that's amazing.
First recreate of the season, baby.
Starting off strong.
Turned off strong.
Okay, so my recreate is an homage to the ASEAN language. So one of my favorite things about Wicked is that it's like done extremely nonchalantly. Just words are just like different randomly. So I'll just like read... This time around, I literally had an ongoing list and I had like 30 plus words that I wrote down that were different. So I'm just going to say a few that like I wrote down. Outuendo, scandalous, rejoicify, clandestinely, unprepossessing, discoverates. Like there's just a bunch of weird things like that.
Yeah.
So for my recreate, I thought there's a Wicked movie that's been in production since 2004. It's a myth at this point. Who knows if it'll ever happen? But if it does, maybe they could use some new words. So I came up with some new words for them to use. But the real part of this recreate is that I'm going to be quizzing you and I'm going to say a word and you have to say if it's Wicked or if I made it up.
Okay. Oh, God.
Okay. Ready?
Yes.
Hideous.
You made that up.
No, it's a
damn
Wicked.
It, really? When? Yeah.
I think it's in the scene where Elphaba is introduced in front of all of the students and someone says, "She's hideous."
Oh my God. Okay. All right.
I could be wrong, but I think that's where it is. Splendiferous.
You made that up?
I did make that
okay,
up.
Okay.
Gratitution.
That's in Wicked.
It is in Wicked.
Okay, good. Woo! All right, 2 for 3.
Perfectular.
Perfectular. That's
perfectular.
In Wicked?
Perfectular.
Perfectular.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Wicked?
No. I made that up.
I don't know. It sounds like something Professor What's-His-Name would have said.
Yeah. Right. Demonstrifying.
That's in Wicked.
No.
Really? Oh my god! So confident.
Disrespectation.
You made that up?
No, it's in Wicked. Fantastifying.
God. That's in Wicked. No. Are you kidding?
Made it up.
You're really good at this.
Thank you. Fortitude.
Fortitude?
Yes.
Can you use it in a sentence?
He performed that task with the utmost fortitude.
You made that up.
Yeah.
Ooh, all right. Coming back.
Disgusticified.
That's in Wicked.
Yeah.
Someone so disgusted.
Disgusticified. And then festivating.
That's in Wicked?
Yeah.
Ooh, so all right.
50%.
All right. Okay. I just think that means you
so the ones I made up were splendiferous, perfectular, demonstrifying, fantastifying, and fortitude.
Those are really good. Stephen Schwartz would be proud.
Thank you. Give him a call. Hit me up, Steve. Yeah, no, he can give me a call.
Give the guys a call, Steve.
Well, wow, that was an amazing episode one of season two of Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm so excited for this season, Sammy.
Me too. Should we
tease next week's category? Yeah.
Do you know what it is? So I don't have a
clue. I do. I can announce it.
All right. So next week's category is, drumroll,
shows we hate. Okay. Really, really, really don't like.
Hate could be correct.
I know.
I
was kind of going for that hate is a strong word, but I really, really, really don't like you vibe.
Hate is a strong word. I'm going to leave it at that. Oh man. All right.
So guess what shows will be representing.
And I think we should bring, I'm saying this, and this is probably not great to admit, but I had 2 glasses of wine throughout the course of this podcast. So
I smoked a bowl before this.
Good. So I did get a little tipsy at the end. But I think we should bring back our whiskey shot TikTok challenge.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially for these shows, you have to do Wicked, and then there are some fun Laura Benanti little head voice / belts in.
For context, y'all, I really don't. I don't like drinking at all.
He really doesn't.
I really don't. But I will do it for the pod.
That's what you gotta do. Do it for the pod. Also, do it for the notoriety.
I just don't like it.
That's fair. All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We love you. And
we love you.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Woo! Red.